The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Men of Letters, a supernatural podcast.
This is Dad's single most valuable possession. Everything he knows about every evil thing is in here. He's passed it on to us. I think he wants us to pick up where he left off. You know, saving people, hunting things, the family business.
Storm's coming. You boys, your daddy, you are smack in the middle of it.
House rules, Sammy. Driver picks the music. Shotgun shuts his cake hole.
No chick flick moments.
All right, jerk. Bitch.
That Constance chick, what a bitch!
Or you think it's shooting Casper in the face, you freak.
Eat me. No, wait, you actually might.
Hope your apple pie is freaking worth it!
Recorded January 26, 2018. Hello and welcome to our very first, or our pilot episode of Men of Letters, a supernatural retrospective podcast. We are your hosts, Tim and Katie. So Katie, before we dive into the synopsis and reviews of the first couple of episodes, why don't you tell the listeners a little something about yourself? How did you come to learn of supernatural and whatnot?
I don't know. I really just kind of fell into it. It was more of like an accident.
Okay.
It really was. I was like, what's this? And then I became obsessed, and I, you know, got the Netflix, had to start right from the beginning, and haven't stopped watching again and again and again.
Very cool. Yes, my love affair became a long time ago. I mean, it actually started about a week before the actual television premiere date on the then WB Network or Warner Brothers Network. See, kids, back in the day, in 2005, online streaming services were pretty much, well, for the most part, non-existent. Netflix was only a DVD rental service by mail. Amazon wasn't even Prime yet. YouTube was around, but not like it is today. And I don't even think Hulu existed yet. But anyway, one night at work, while I was surfing the web, on a Yahoo website, under Yahoo TV, they were promoting a sneak peek of the newest WB show, a full one-hour episode. No 30-second teaser clips or anything, but an actual full episode with limited commercial interruptions. I thought, wow, man, I can't believe it. And it was about two brothers in a muscle car killing monsters. Like, okay, I'm sold. So long story short, I watched that pilot episode about twice every day that I worked for the next 5 days. Supernatural is currently in its 13th season as of this recording. It hasn't officially been renewed yet for a 14th season, but by all indications, it should be renewed once again. I believe CW President Mark Penowitz was even quoted as saying he would not cancel Supernatural, and as long as the boys wanted to keep making the show, it would continue. Over the course of the show's run so far, they've had their time slot changed 5 times, included the dreaded Friday night time slot at 8 o'clock, 3 network presidents, and a writer's strike. That is quite a bit.
It really is.
Yeah, it is. You can't keep a good show down, I guess.
No, you can't. That's unbelievable. Honestly, I didn't know that. That's incredible.
Yeah. So before we dive into the pilot episode, let's take a small commercial break.
All right. We have Murder, She Hoed. Not 60 Minutes, a porn parody. Oh, and little video game action, too, with some Granny Turismo. Well, here you are, ma'am. We'll see you back here in a week.
You here to seduce me? Oh, no, please. Seduce away. It's been so long. Now I rather think it's all for naught.
Hey, Mark, did you finish checking the video store for any customers? I don't want another repeat of last week, you know. The last thing that's this video store that we're keeping open so that we can dig ourselves out of massive debt that you were told about in the past by my future self is to have Hobo Mike or Small Talker or Tom or either of the two ghosts of people that died decades ago or any of the other crazy characters that we seem to interact with on a monthly basis given free rein in here overnight.
Yep. That's what we're all about.
Whatever. Did you finish your store walk or not?
Well, I'm back in the front of the store, aren't I? Jesus.
You know, I'm impressed with you, buddy. You know, I think you're finally taking this all seriously.
You know what? Funny thing, I actually forgot my jacket in the store. or something. I don't know. I mean, you don't have to wait for me. I got to go back in, though, okay?
But aren't you where...
All right, everybody. Ken is gone. Party!
Yay!
Yay! I'm super hard!
The Mark and Ken Video Store Podcast. Scripted for your pleasure.
Well, let's kick the tires and light the fire, shall we? Here's the original WB commercial for the pilot episode.
These types of things, they aren't supposed to be real.
You ever heard of something like this before?
Never seen.
Whatever it is out there, no one's living to talk about it.
Supernatural, series premiere tomorrow at 9, 8 central on the WB Tuesday.
The pilot, directed by David Nutter, written by Eric Kripke, with the original air date of September 13, 2005. As children, Sam, played by Pat Alecki, and Dean Winchester, Eccles, mother Mary, played by Samantha Smith, died in a violent, unexplained death, which in turn led their father, John Winchester, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, to teach them hunting skills in search of the creature that took her life. Years later, while attending Stanford University, Sam is forced back into the paranormal world by Dean, who has come to tell him that their father is missing. The two travel to Jericho, California to find him, but their search is put on hold when they discover that a ghostly woman in white, played by Sarah Shaw, the spirit of the woman who drowned her children and then killed herself, has been taking male victims. They investigate, but Dean is arrested for impersonating a federal agent. However, he manages to escape custody and saves his brother from the vengeful spirit. The woman in white is finally put to rest after the brothers force her to confront the spirit of her children. Sam later returns to home, but discovers his girlfriend, Jessica, played by Adrienne Palicki, pinned to the ceiling. He is then forced to watch as she is killed in the same supernatural manner as his mother was. Jessica's death prompts him to return to the hunting life with Dean. So, this synopsis was graciously provided by the fine people at Wikipedia. So, let's dive in, shall we, Katie?
Let's hit it.
All right. So, what are your initial thoughts when you first saw the pilot episode?
You know, it's watching, like, the whole season, like, all of the seasons in their entirety, nearly. It's, go back and you see it. It's, like, so basic and almost primitive. But I really enjoyed it because it's a lot more raw, you know, than it has become.
Yes.
And just, it just seems like somebody took, like, this is their homework, you know, and they're doing this movie for class. It's just bare and out there, you know? It's not like Hollywood.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I get that from at least like the first couple of seasons. It feels much darker in tone of the overall series. You get these brothers. Everything's shot more in the shadows, even when it's during the daylight. It feels grittier.
I think they're shooting with a blue filter on the camera, and and that's of course done purposely for that, like kind of like darker effect.
Right, and I get the sense that there seems to be, you get an automatic feeling of like a bond between the two lead characters right off the bat. There's no like warm up period. You feel like these guys have been brothers. I mean, nothing feels forced from the get go.
No.
I really kind of fell in love with that kind of aspect of these two brothers just hunting monsters, and you know that was their thing, and they have a weekly monster of the week kind of. Situation with still carrying on with an arc where it didn't feel too soap opera, like daytime soap opera kind of feel with it. I mean, you got the monsters, but then you also have got the brothers searching for their dad and the demon that or supernatural thing that killed their mother and Jessica. So I really dug that kind of aspect of it.
And you know what's funny is that, you know, they didn't have anybody else like interview for these the positions, like in a sense. They had both Jensen Ackles and Pat Lecky interview for the spot of Sam. Mm-hmm. And nobody had done it for Dean, so they had two Sams on their hand, and they're like, okay, well, you know, hey Jensen, your smart alecky attitude will work better for Dean, and they just like mesh so well.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't see, now looking back at that, I couldn't see like Jensen Ackles playing a Sam part. I'm like, no, Dean's too much of a smart ass. Dean is too much of like a, you know, pretty much in the earlier episode, well, pretty much throughout the entire series, he's the hard nose. He's the, you know, kind of like the pit bull. Sam does have those tendencies throughout the series as well, but he's more like, hey, let's think about this. Hey, you know, he's the more of the rational one, I want to say.
Right, and I think there's even a point in one of the early episodes where Dean is on his own and he says, you know, if Sam was here, he'd just lay those puppy dog eyes on you and that would be it. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it is. I mean, as they age, Sam loses some of that, mm-hmm. but he's still that like soft side to him, soft brother where, you know,
I wouldn't say he's the more of the pushover, but he's more of the one that could be persuaded to maybe not shoot first and ask questions later kind of attitude.
Yeah.
But these guys that, and you know, I don't know how you felt watching, doing the rewatch, but since I've watched it from the very beginning, sometimes I forget how much time has passed.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're going 13, almost 14 years now, and that's an extremely long time for a TV show to be on for any amount of time. I mean, I think they said at one point this was the longest running, like, supernatural or sci-fi TV show. Continually, I know Doctor Who is up there, but there was something with the. I guess there was some sort of reboot. I mean, I don't follow Doctor Who, so I can't really say.
They did have. It was on for a very long time. It took a break, mm-hmm. and then it came back on. I think in 1995, and then it's gone on since. But that's a whole other level of stuff. I mean, for this kind of popular TV, like from quote unquote America,
right.
We don't have that. I mean, we have some of the cop shows and stuff that last a really long time.
Yeah, like I know. I think it was NCIS. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Grey's Anatomy, if we're just talking 1 hour dramas, I think Grey's Anatomy is right there with Supernatural being around season 13, 14 right now.
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. Because I remember watching Grey's Anatomy when I was much younger and seeing Jeffrey Dean Morgan on that.
Yes.
And then watching this, and I was like, what?
I know, I had this because I used to watch that as well with my wife, and I was like, "Oh my God, that's John Winchester. That's not Denny." And then all of a sudden,
oh, I know we called him Dead Denny, and I saw him on the day. I was like, "It's Dead Denny."
Yeah, it's so you get him coming from Supernatural, where he passes away, to becoming that being Denny, which he ends up passing away on.
I know he's always dying,
and now he's Negan on Walking Dead.
I know. Now he's killing things instead of dying something.
Yes, yes. We're making deals with demons to die. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
But getting back.
Badass on the left.
Yes, yes. Where were we? I forget where we're at.
Somewhere.
Somewhere in the vicinity of Supernatural.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yeah. So. Oh my gosh! So anyway, we've
been talking about the length of the show.
The many years that's been on, and it's just it's been a. But anyway, yes, that's where I was gonna. That's thank you. going back to the rewatch, going back and watching the first couple of episodes and watching the first season, I'm like, holy crap! They're so baby. They're like babies.
They are.
I'm like, and it's weird. It's like. I've grown watching them every week. I've grown up with them. I mean, even though I was 26 when the show premiered, or 27, I'm like, I feel like I've grown with them. I've gone, you know, I got out of a bad relationship, and then, you know, went to school and graduated, and then found my wife, had kids, moved, you know, all this stuff, and the show was still going on.
I'm younger than you by enough. It is. It's like you take this show and then you grow up with it.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, essentially as an adult, you're growing into adult with a great show. Yeah. I mean, Jensen Ackles was on, like, because my friends used to watch all those soap operas. He was on one of those, like.
I know. Oh my god! And watching him when he was like a teenager on, I mean, I saw like, I want to say old clips of him like on the soap opera where I think he won an award or something.
Yeah.
And I was watching him on some sort of like Regis and Kathy Lee like type show, and I was like, oh my god! I was like, he looks like a fetus.
Yeah. I know, because he's, like, such a, like, a manly man. He's, like, you know, very masculine and you know, cheeky, I guess. But, you know, even, so I watched the first season recently, and then I hit the second season. And even between, like, the first and the second season, he like, jumps in maturity. Mm-hmm. You know, you can really, and physically, you can see it in his face and the way he acts. He's more comfortable, I think, with the role. There's really a big difference, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. No, he's definitely very talented. I'm such a fan that I actually a couple of years ago I went to the Supernatural convention when it was in Chicago, and I missed the karaoke night, and apparently he got out there and he with a guitar, because he sings. He's a singer as well. Yeah. I'm like, and I thought he was just doing it for fun, like just being silly on the show, because, you know, you see the outtakes where he's singing Eye of the Tiger or whatever. But the guy has got a fantastic singing voice.
He's very talented.
Yeah, he's also directed a handful of episodes. I mean, so he's what do they call it? Like a multifaceted. What's that?
A jack of all trades.
A jack of all trades, yes, there you go.
He's a Jensen of all trades.
And I just read that he is opening a new restaurant and bar down in Austin. So called I think it's The Family Business. I'm like, oh crap, I gotta go.
Yeah, I did hear about that. I need to go there. I need like, something.
Road trip.
Exactly.
Oh god. But anyway, getting back to the pilot episode, for me, a lot worked for it, and I didn't see any kind of like things they could improve upon. Maybe, I don't know. Did you? I mean,
I think for like a beginning, they hit all of the things that they need to hit.
It was a solid. I mean, to me, it was a solid outing.
Yeah,
I mean,
and I know they did a lot of rewrites on it, and I know there was a lot cut and a lot redone, but I think the way it came out, it was great, because they did have this great introduction about the boys, what happened to them when they were young. Mm-hmm. And then like, okay, well, where's dad, you know, what's if he's on a hunting trip, and then that pulling them together and kind of bringing that tumultuous childhood with this, you know, older brother camaraderie,
right?
And then finishing off the episode the way they did, I just think from start to finish, I was, you know, it is impressive.
Yeah,
I mean, a pilot for a show—you don't have that.
Yeah, the whole scene, the whole like, I think I want to say two or three scenes setting up where you see Jared Padalecki's character Sam. He's at Stanford University. He's just graduated. He's got a chance to interview at a prestigious law firm, and he's got everything going for him. His brother shows up out of the blue. And their whole dynamic where they're fighting, and he's like, hey, you know, would you, if I called, you have picked up? Probably not, you know, blah, blah, blah. I just came for a beer, but, you know, dad's, like you said, dad's on a hunting trip and he hasn't been home in a few days. And then you cut the close up of Sam's face, and he's like, okay, Jess, we got to talk, you know, and then we got to do some family, talk about some family business. And then you see him, and the whole back and forth about how he's like, you know, I just want to go to the school. Dad was saying, if you're gone, stay gone, kind of thing. And where they're, and they're bickering back and forth. He's like, do you think, you know, when I was 9 years old, dad said, you know, I told him I was afraid of the thing in my closet. He gave me a 45, you know, just all these like,
yeah.
I mean, you get this sense of like really like deep, like history, but also kind of like,
it's relatable.
Yeah. It's relatable and it's dark and it's kind of strange, but then you see them go to the car, the baby. I love that car. They pop the trunk, and he's looking through all the, you know, their hunting stuff, and he pulls out the, you know, the recording, and he's like, oh, you better check the AVP or whatever it is. He goes, oh, it's like riding a bike, Sammy, right? I'm like, oh, it's just so much stuff, like, and it's just it's so fantastic how they just interact with each other, and I absolutely love the whole X-Files, like, constant, like little digs at X-Files, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably picked up on a few of those.
Yeah, because they do have, like, those tiny little... I love when they do a hat tip to different things, you know? That's things I enjoy in every show I watch, is when they do, like, a little hat tip to some other show.
A little pop culture reference.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, like where they're investigating the murder and disappearance of the of I forget the guy's name real quickly. You see him in the beginning of the episode getting attacked by the woman in white, kind of like the creepy the boyfriend. Troy. You see Troy get his desserts, you know, and over the bridge where he gets killed by Constance, or the woman in white, and then you see them on the bridge and they're walking and they're with the they're posing as was it federal agents or federal sheriffs or
federal
marshals? There you go, and they're walking back and the FBI agents come by and he goes, Mulder, Scully, and they just kind of walk away.
Right? It's so good.
Yes.
With the woman in white, they kind of do this little thing to, I don't know if you're familiar with La Llorona, which is like, it's a Latin kind of myth about the woman in white who, you know, they take this woman who kills her children, where I think La Llorona, like, she commits suicide, so they call her the weeping woman, but they took these, like, things, and they, like, mashed them together, which I kind of liked.
Yeah, well, and that was the whole, I think, one of the whole selling points at the time, it was doing all these, like, mythical and, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Yes, urban legends.
Like, Bloody Mary and, just just like these
small town legends.
And I really dug that about that. I mean, you had this, you know, we're gonna get into that later on, but yes, I really dig a lot of the episodes, especially from the first season. And I think at the end of our first season recap, we should do our top five episodes of the year of the season, because from season one, there's just so many. But yes, the boys are investigating not only the woman or the woman in white or the weeping woman, but they're also, you know, trying to find John, and John is kind of MIA, and they keep trying to, every time you think they're going to get to him or find John, he's always one step away. You know, it's like for every step they take, John's three steps ahead.
Right, and well, they always are mentioning, well, like, Dad sent us here, or Dad was here, or...
Yes, the coordinates on, you know, in his journal, a phone call, a voicemail, whatever. But yes.
Well, was it the first episode there, the pilot, that they go into the motel, and they're like, are you guys having some kind of reunion?
Ah, yes, the whole Berta Framian and the son Hector, yes, the... Ah. I love that part, because before that you see, you know, Sam talking to Dean, and they're at the gas station, they're filling up, and he's like, so you and Dad still running credit card scams? And he goes, yeah, you know, hunting isn't necessarily a pro ball career, so you get the feel, you know, he's like, we just apply for the credit cards, they just send it to us, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and then, they get to the hotel, and the guy's like, yeah, you got some sort of, like, family reunion, you know, your father brought out the whole room for the month, and so they break into John's room, and you see the whole display of pictures and just his layout of what he's hunting. So yes, it's just again, a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, and I like when they you know, they came to arrest Dean for impersonating.
Yeah, a federal agent.
A federal agent,
yes.
Marshall,
yes.
And so they take him in, and then when they're in the police station, the guy just, like, throws their dad's book right on the table. And it's like, that is like a super serious moment. Because that book wasn't talked about or known about until like that second.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
We had no idea. And it was, you know, tell me what this means. And it had Dean's name on it.
And coordinates or some sort of numbers written down.
On the page, yeah.
Yeah, which he said, oh, that's my whole high school locker combination. And just, he's like, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, and he's like, just being a complete smartass. He's like, what's your name? Ted Nugent. I'm like, oh, God. And I guess that was like the first time they used a rock alias name.
Yeah. Because when they gave the names in the beginning, they weren't like rock and roll names. They were just some kind of made up nonsense.
Yes.
But yeah, when they do the whole like rock and roll,
yeah,
you know, the Page and Plant kind of a deal.
Yes.
I really love that.
Yes. Yes. That's one of their staples.
It's a good staple. I love me some rock and roll.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that very soon. But there's another scene. This just goes for the entire episode. Where so Dean's like, you know, in jail, and then or you know, in custody, not in jail, but in custody of the sheriff. And all of a sudden, they get a 911 call, shots fired somewhere. So he asks Dean, he's like, "You got to go to the bathroom." He goes, "No," and they lock him up on the to the table, and obviously Jared calls in the fake. I mean, Sam's calls in the fake 911 call so they could get so Dean Winchester can get out of the handcuffs.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, calling in a false, you know, making a false call is a federal
offense here, Sammy. And he's like, what were you thinking about shooting Casper in the face? Just all these listeners, just off the wall, like. Just ribbing each other, and so
that's where it really they're you can tell, because that's what I do to my friends. Like, we rip renew each other sometimes, and just like a bunch of like shit talk back and forth, and that's how you know like they love each other,
right?
Because they talk so much shit.
While Dean is talking to Sam on the phone, Sam is driving down the road, that same stretch of highway, trying to find, I think he's trying to go back to the house to dig up the bones of Constance or something along those lines, I want to say, because...
Yeah, because they had talked to, he had went and talked to her husband.
Yes.
And then, so, he was on his way.
Right, and then Constance gets in the car and, you know, pretty much pulls a Carrie Christine, sorry, from Stephen King, Christine, where she, this is the second time in the episode where she takes over the car of, takes over baby or the 67 Impala and drives, and Sam is not in control of the car at all, drives it right to the house, and she's going to kill him. He goes like, you can't kill me because I'm not a cheater.
I haven't been unfaithful.
And she goes, just you wait. And she, and then when he refuses her, she starts to rip at his heart. And that's when Dean rides to the rescue and starts, you know, shooting up the joint.
Right. Yeah. And he blasts her with like the rock salt in the shotgun.
Yes. Yes. And then And then Sam says, I'm going to take you home. And he plows through the front of the house. And that's the end.
And you really found out that she, you know, they were kind of questioning. Did she kill those kids? Her husband said, never in a million years. And then it was, yeah, she did.
Yeah, because, and now the creepy moment that still makes my hair stand up to this day, and I've seen this episode probably 100 times, is or when the kids are at the top of the stairs and the water starts to flow down the stairs. And,
I love that.
And the kids are standing next to one another and they grab each other's hands and they're like, Mommy, we've been waiting for you. I'm like, oh, fuck, that's just like, okay, that's it.
It's just going down.
Yeah, and then you see her standing there, like, looking remorseful, and these kids, like, converge on her, and then just the special effects, and she turns into, they turn into a puddle of water.
For that time, I think, from when they started filming that show from that time period, it was like, I really enjoyed the effects, you know, like that jumping of her spirit in the car where it kind of was flashing like that.
Yep.
And then how they did that kind of like demonic pulling into the ground, into the puddle, you know, to hell or wherever, you know, they may be going. Mm-hmm. It was so well done.
Yeah, I want to say, for me, the special effects of the first season still pretty much hold up. They don't look hokey. They don't look, like, dated.
No.
And
you know, not like a lot of shows where you can tell. It was like, okay,
yeah,
you know, there's a string there.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, and this is, like I said, this is over a decade ago, so they did something right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they didn't go wrong. They've been doing a lot of things right.
Oh, yeah.
And it's such a great show. And all the characters are great. Everything is just so well written.
It is very well written. We talked about the music and the classic rock, and I just wanted to bring this up, that in the pilot episode, there were 16 songs used in that 1 hour episode, which doesn't seem like a lot, but you figure they use sampling of, like, you know, 18 seconds here, 10 seconds there. But I have a rundown of all the songs, and if you want to find the songs for Supernatural, this is a great website. It's called TuneFind.com, and just type in Supernatural, and they'll give you all the songs to all the episodes, which is kind of cool because I've always wanted to make a playlist for myself. But for the pilot episode, Highway to Hell by AC/DC, Back in Black by AC/DC, What You Gonna Do featuring North Shore by Classic, Speaking in Tongues by Eagles of Death Metal, Ramblin' Man by the Allman Brothers Band, Gasoline by the Living Daylights, Gasoline by Seether, My Cheatin' Ways by Kid Gloves Music, Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day, She Cheated on a Cheater by Keith Roser, A Gift to the World by Loveless, Gasoline by Ginger. Boy, you see, I guess you see a pattern here with all the Gasoline songs.
Right.
Dean's Dirty Organ, Brothers Guitar Theme, played by Jay Gruza and Christopher Lerntz. And then these two songs didn't appear. They appeared on the unaired pilot. So they may have appeared in the show that I saw, but I don't remember them. But Enter the Sandman by Metallica and 99 Problems by Jay-Z and Surviving the Night by Mandropony. So a very interesting list of music in the first episode.
Well, yeah, because I even think, like, when Sam gets in the car with Dean, he's, like, flipping through his tapes, and he's like, you know, what is this? Like, Mullet Wears Top 10 or something,
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, it's the greatest hit of mullet rock. You know, you've got, yeah, Motorhead, yeah,
and Metallica, yeah, yeah, and he does, yes, all those things. And, you know, that's when you first hear Driver Picks the Music,
Shotgun Shuts His Cake Hole. Which is awesome. It's on t-shirts, it's on coffee mugs and shot glasses.
I say it to my kids. It's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, I guess when I went to the convention, I actually had a chance to buy a shot glass or a coffee cup. I'm like, I got to go with coffee cup because I don't drink shots anymore. And I use that coffee cup pretty much about 3 or 4 times a week.
But, gonna get buried with you.
Oh, yeah. Now, we have a Supernatural link, which is kind of a fun fact, and I don't know if you know this. Have you ever seen the movie Life Force, for the Tobe Hooper film?
I'm not sure.
It's about the vampire aliens that try to take over the world. It was by Tobe Hooper back in the early
80s. It was like from 1985 or something.
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so but anyway. Don't think I did see it. Like, I remember it, but I don't remember seeing it.
Okay. Well, the star of that film, or one of the stars of that film, was Steve Railsback, and he was the guy that played Joseph Welch, the husband. So that is kind of like a fun fact. He's been in a lot of other things, but I predominantly know him from Life Force, the Tobe Hooper film. So if you get a chance to check that out, it's actually pretty well done for an 80s non-Star Wars sci-fi type film.
I'm going to have to check it out.
And it also has a young Patrick Stewart long before his Star Trek The Next Generation days, and he looks exactly the same. The guy just hasn't aged since 1988.
Oh, I know. Patrick Stewart, he looks fantastic. Ridiculous.
Yes. Oh, my God. So, with that, I think we've pretty much covered the pilot episode, don't you think?
I think so, because I think we've talked about everything great about it. You know, we laid down how it, what happened, you know, how the characters got their beginnings, the awesome music that's played throughout, and, you know, just how they just, it was a solid beginning to this amazing, you know, series.
I absolutely love Supernatural, obviously, because they're doing the show, and why would we not do it? Yeah, we talked about it for like ever and a day, but even other shows that I absolutely love, like Friends, for example, another show that, in my opinion, is a great sitcom and will go down in the history of being one of the greatest sitcoms, their pilot episode was not that great. This is much better, a much better pilot episode.
Yeah, I think in of like, if you look at a lot of, just pile all the pilots together and you see, you know, which ones were done good. There's a bunch. Some of them are terrible. Some of them are good. But this is really one of the great ones.
Yes, I wholeheartedly concur. So before we start our second episode discussion of, I believe, I can't pronounce this right, Katie, what is it? Wendigo? Wendigo?
Wendigo.
Wendigo.
That's how I see it, yeah.
Okay. So either... Yeah, let's say Wendigo. Before we start a discussion for Wendigo, let's take one more small commercial break.
Hey, Dave, what's going on?
I can't beat this poo-stained rectal nugget online. It's like he's psychic. He knows what buttons I'm going to push before I push them. God damn it!
Wow, double perfect? You might be ass. Like, literal ass. Don't open your mouth, because it'll smell like straight sewage.
Ugh, dear. Your support is always endearing and welcome, Cal. I think it's culturally biased against people of Latin descent.
It's a game. It has no racial, ethnic, or cultural bias. It can't, because it's an inanimate object, silly.
I still think it doesn't like my button presses. It's like I'm not going to do the kick you want to do because your fingers smell like fried bananas and pork.
That is literally the most ridiculous thing that's ever come out of your mouth. And the list of ridiculous things you have said is long and storied. It's a grocery list of vulgarity, the likes of which the world has never known.
Your face is a grocery list of vulgarity, the likes of which the world has never known.
Good comeback.
I try.
Was that the set? Wow, that was quick. Don't blink or Dave will have already gotten his ass kicked.
I think I have PTSD from that set. All I remember was round one and then just darkness. Then it was over and the game happily stated, you lose, you fail at life, shove your head in a toilet and keep flushing.
I don't think the game would say that, although it would be amazing if it did.
Well, how did you do in your Marvel, Mr. Judgmental?
Oh, I lost. I got so salty I kicked a chair, but the chair won because I hurt my foot. It's always disheartening when you lose both online and to furniture.
Oh, that's why you're limping. I thought you just developed a new pimp walk. I like it.
Yeah, it definitely attracts the ladies for sure. Anyway, ready to podcast?
Absolutely. Just because we're scrubs doesn't mean we can't have opinions and humorous observations about fighting games.
Speak for yourself. I'm the greatest of all time.
Legend in your own mind, Kevin. Legend in your own mind. Let's do this. Whether you're a rookie or a world champ, this podcast is for you. Join Dave and Kevin as they discuss all things fighting games in the FGC. Fighting Words, the definitive podcast by two guys who don't let their sodium levels affect their love for a good fight.
Okay, well now let's play the original Wendigo teaser trailer, teaser commercial now.
Coming weeks on
just disappear. You don't think I want to find Dad as much as you do?
The indestructible.
It's smart.
The unthinkable. The new series, Supernatural, on the WB Tuesday.
Wow. gotta love me some Supernatural. Episode number two, Wendigo. Wendigo. Yes. Winnebago? Okay. Yes. Again, directed by David Nutter. Story by Ron Milburn and Terry Hughes Burton. Teleplay by Eric Kripke. and this show premiered on September 20th, 2005. After having no luck in the investigation of Jessica's death, the brothers follow instructions found in their father's journal and head to Blackwater Ridge, Lost Creek, Colorado. Posing as park rangers, they help a young woman named Haley, played by Gina Holden, and her younger brother, Ben, played by Aldrin Ehrenreich, search for their lost older brother, Tommy, who disappeared while on a camping trip. Sam and Dean soon realize that he was taken by a Wendigo that has terrorized the woods since 1936. While searching, Haley and Dean are kidnapped by the creature, but Sam and Ben are able to track them to a mine. After Dean, Haley, and Tommy are freed, they kill the Wendigo with a flare gun. So, let's dive in, shall we? What were your thoughts?
It was interesting. You know, this was something that you didn't see. Like, you don't hear about these little, like, neighborhood or, like, these cultural boogeymen. You know, when the Wendigo is, like, you don't hear about that a lot. Yeah. You don't hear, like, it's just, I was surprised.
Yeah, it's these American horror tales or urban legends, you know, so yeah, I mean, with the woman in white, or the weeping woman, and now the Wendigo, which is just like this cannibalistic, like, monster that terrorizes.
They take all this lore,
yeah,
and they bring it to life. I think they did one on the Chupacabra, and just all these little, like, the boogeymen. I knew about the Chupacabra when I was growing up, and you hear all, you know, these little, the boogeyman, seriously.
Yes. They're all boogeymen.
Yeah, so, I mean, just, you know, knowing the Chupacabra as, like, the boogeyman and the cuckoo, and that's what my grandfather called them, is, you know, the boogeyman.
Yeah, basically, most of these were cautionary tales just to keep children and people in line, but there had to be some sort of half-truth to something somewhere along the line.
Right, and I think that's where they were like, well, they have these stories. Why don't we just pick it up and make it something plausible?
Yes.
You know, which they really do. The story is, I mean, you never know. You know,
right? Well, and this second episode marks the first time that they shot in Canada. The pilot episode was all shot in L.A. And they moved their productions to the Great White North, and they've been there ever since.
Yeah, the shooting costs there are quite different in expense compared to in the States, which is unfortunate. I mean, that we don't do enough business down here.
Yeah.
Gotta be sent up to Canada, eh?
Eh, don't you know? Well, and you got Georgia too. I mean, Georgia's got a lot of great tax break incentives. I mean, if you are Walking Dead, there's like a million different shows that shoot down there. But yeah, Canada is basically almost like a CW Central right now, because all the CW shows shoot up there. You got Supergirl and The Flash and Arrow and all of them basically.
Yeah, all of them really do. Even a lot of sci-fi shows.
Yeah.
That I've seen. You know, the Sci-Fi Channel, they shoot up there. A lot of them are done in Canada.
Oh, yeah. But getting back to the episode, so basically the boys are in the car and they're driving, and they're talking back and forth, and Sam and Dean are like, we had no luck in investigating Jessica's death. It's kind of, we reached a dead end. Dad, you know, is MIA still. But we've got these coordinates, we've got these things, and he wants us to look into this, into Blackwater Ridge. And Sam needs a little bit more convincing than Dean, because Dean always goes by what his dad says no matter what. And Sam is kind of like, you get the sense they're going to butt heads a lot. So Dean drives to Blackwater Ridge. They check in with the local ranger station. We find out that Tommy and his group of friends were out backpacking and are missing. But the rangers are saying, "Look, they're not missing. They're not yet anyway, because they were scheduled to be back in another few days, and why are we pushing the panic button right now? They've still got like 4 days before they have to come back, kind of thing. Haley is a hard-headed young lady, and she won't take no for an answer. She hires a guide, and we see Haley and Dean and as a park ranger trying to, I don't know, find out why her brother's missing, I guess, or whatever. So she shows them some video footage. They analyze it. And Sam and Dean back at the hotel, and Sam and Dean realize there's something more here, and it's like a quick flash frame, right, of this monster or whatever it is, a shadow. So they talk to, so they all meet up, and they're
a checkpoint, I think, is what it might be.
What's that?
I think it might be called like a checkpoint.
Yeah, checkpoint. There you go, checkpoint. You got all the vernacular down.
Hey!
Hey! So they meet at the check. What's that?
I speak good English.
I speak good words. I have the best words.
I have the best words. My brain works really well.
but anyway, so they meet at the checkpoint, and we run into another hard nosed. I guess what do you call him? Like a ranger? Not a ranger, but the guide. And he thinks he knows it all, and he's seen it all, and
classic douchebag.
Yes, exactly. He's like, I've been hunting these woods since you were, you know, something about a baby's mama, and like, okay, dude, whatever. So automatically Dean takes up like saying, just gonna fuck with this guy.
Like his smart ass comments that he always does.
Yeah. He's like, "Hey, Ranger, you know, did in all your times hunting of Bambi and Yogi, did they ever hunt you back?" And he was like, "What?" Oh my god! So, well, okay, why don't you take over, Kay? What happens next after they're in? They make it past the checkpoint and they're walking through the forest.
Don't they stumble upon the campsite?
They do.
Because everything's kind of messed up, and you see the tent is torn, and some things are strewn about.
Right. Haley finds the broken satellite phone that her brother Tommy had, and all of a sudden, Sam and Dean looked at one another like, do anything notice anything different? Like, there's no, it's quiet. He goes, not even crickets, nothing is going on. So that starts to alarm. It's a red flag for the brothers. apparently nobody else noticed this. I'm surprised the hunter didn't notice this either.
Right. He's an expert.
Correct. So there in the forest, all of a sudden you start hearing like, a voice calling for help. And so of course everybody drops all their stuff and they go running. And then all of a sudden they stop and like, wait a minute, something's wrong. Let's go back where we came from. And they realize all their gear is gone.
Right. Because they, in this episode with the Wendigo, they give it like this capability to, it's like partially human or to imitate humans. Mm-hmm. And it's very like successful and convincing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what like draws them away because they think, oh yeah, something's going down.
Right.
Well, no, he's just stealing your stuff.
Right. Yeah, you can mimic voices, mimic the human voice near perfect. And actually, before this, I want to say Sam and Dean, before they meet the checkpoint, before they go into the forest, just backtracking just a little bit, they meet, and there was one sole survivor back in like the 60s or whatever it is, the 50s.
Right.
And it was a little boy, and we come to realize that it wasn't a bear attack, and it was something else because the boy's like saying, well, what did it do? Did it like tear through your tent or something? Like, he goes, no. It opened the door in the cabin.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, and he was just a baby at the time, and he goes, yeah, they killed my folks, and they left something to remind me by, and it's just like this big scar across his chest, like these claw marks. And then, now fast-forwarding back to where we're at, I wanted to bring that up because I just thought that was a very eerie and cool kind of scene.
they left this kid.
Alive.
Yeah.
Which is surprising because once we find out a little bit more about this creature, it's surprising he left this, the baby there. But anyway, so all their camp stuff is gone. Sam and Dean have now have the little powwow. They're like saying, "We got to get these guys out of here. This thing's gonna kill us all." He goes, "It's a great hunter during the day, but it's a near perfect hunter at night." And again, amplifying the danger that this little group is in. And there's a scene where they put a salt circle around the magic circle
they draw symbols or something into the ground.
The dirt, yes, and they put some. I don't think it's rock salt because that's only for demons. But they do something. He goes, yes. They draw something in the dirt, and they say, and then the guide is like, "Oh, do we have to stand inside the magic circle?" Like,
right.
Okay, Dick.
Like, wait till you go outside. Yeah. And then see what happens.
Yes. So of course, about 30 seconds later, douche nozzle walks out of the circle and takes a shot at whatever's howling. And the guy's name is Roy.
Yeah, perfect.
And he's like, perfect. Yeah, so Roy goes out there charging full steam ahead. After he thinks he's winged, he goes, I got it. And then he runs out there, and then all of a sudden he gets sucked up into a tree. And Dean's like, well, you know, he's gonna kill Roy because it pissed him off. And
that's why you don't fuck with a Wendigo.
Yeah, because the Wendigo didn't even take him. He just killed him and dropped him.
Yeah.
You know, the Wendigo needs him for food. Apparently needs him for food. But not Roy. I guess he's too bitter meat. But yeah, so they're in the forest all alone.
And this is where I think they're like, "Hey, listen. This is what we're dealing with."
Yeah. And I believe this is right around the time, either a scene before or a scene after, where Sam and Dean are having their their first heart to heart that's used like in every promo, saving people, hunting things, that whole the whole little speech.
Yeah.
And that is still one of the best speeches of the first season, and it's been immortalized. Basically, this is the same way as the cake hole driver shotgun thing.
right.
And.
Things that we hear, and it's just they're staples now. They've become staples.
Correct. Anyway, I'm a little bit fuzzy on this because it's been about a week since I've seen this episode. After they kill Roy, somehow Dean and Haley get abducted. Do you remember how that happens?
I don't know. I feel like she got distracted, and then he went after her. Is what I think, because it's been about a week for me too.
Yeah, and I know that. So I think Dean goes after Haley, and then it says that Sam and Ben go to track them down to a mine because they through the book or they this Wendigo we come to learn that this Wendigo needs a dark, quiet place and. To feast and to eat to hibernate, and they find a mine shaft and they track it down, and they end up finding Dean and Haley and Tommy. They free Tommy, but Tommy's other friend is not so lucky. He gets eaten pretty quickly. So then Dean runs off, and he's like, okay, he goes, the gun, his 45 with the rock salt and whatever else, other things he had aren't going to work, but they end up finding a flare gun, and apparently the only way you can kill the Wendigo is with a fire. So they shoot the flare gun at the Wendigo, and he bursts into flames. The all is right with the world.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That one was cut and dry, I think.
A second solid effort.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't. It left enough to make you want to come back for more, but it did its job of as a follow up.
Yes.
You know. So but yeah, I liked it. I liked the episode. I liked the whole Wendigo, cannibalistic. Reaper in a cave kind of a thing. You know, they did it justice.
Yeah, I mean,
in my opinion.
And like you said, another American lore or folktale being explored by the good people at Supernatural.
Right. And, job, Kripke.
Yeah. Keep up the good work, sir. Now, the classic rock that was in this episode was a little less than the first one, but we've got Down South Jukin' by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yes.
You Can't Go Wrong with Lynyrd Skynyrd. Fly By Night by Rush, another great band.
Oh, my gosh, right.
And then I've never heard of this group. I mean, I've heard of Tears in Their Beers by Jay Gruska. So,
I've heard that song, but I didn't know who it was by.
Yes. So that was five songs from Wendigo. And the supernatural link is almost kind of like a supernatural sci-fi, if you will, because Alden Ehrenreich, well, this was his first acting gig, according to Internet Movie Database, before he went on to do other films. But he's going to be a well-known household name in about a few short months. He is scheduled to be the young Han Solo. He's tapped to be the young Han Solo in the new Solo Star Wars movie.
That's right.
So this was his first big break.
Well, and then this is where like Kripke was—he's a huge fan of Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted Sam and Dean to be like his Han Solo and his Skywalker.
Yes, well, I'm so glad you picked up on that because I was going to say that. That's awesome. Way to go.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then like the correlation between the two is—I just think that's.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Like, you know, guess what? This is, you know, my premise and what I kind of got this idea I want to do with. And now you got this kid in the second episode who's going, hitting the Star Wars boots.
Yes. And 13 years later, he's Han Solo.
Yeah, no.
Oh, my it's God. A, too funny.
A little coincidence.
Very true. Very true. Well, I want to say we both give the first two episodes a thumbs up. Our next episode will be covering Dead in the Water and
Phantom Traveler.
Ooh, two very good episodes. Well, we'll see. We'll have to tune in and find out.
That's right.
Well, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at our official email address at menofletterssupernatural@gmail.com. We also will have, at one point, have a official Facebook page up and running by probably the second episode. So stay tuned until next time. Katie, you have anything else you'd like to add?
Not. I have nothing to add because we've added enough because we said it all, Tim. What else can we say?
All right, jerk.
Okay, bitch.
All right. Until next time, have a great night. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's the end of the episode.
Thank you for listening.